racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, about 10 minutes in. Sean Clancy is standing by, and tomorrow, another award for a Clancy. You guys should really build like a Clancy Award Museum.
Good morning, Steve. I like that idea. My brother won the Old Hilltop Award, which is, as you know, a great honor. So we have been very proud of my big brother all his life, and even more so now. And he deserves an Old Hilltop Award just for putting up with his little brother and Tom Wall, probably.
Well, that nobody's going to argue that point. How much older? You know, that's an interesting point. How much older is Joe than you?
He is 5 years older, and he has been and is the greatest big brother, the greatest influence in my life, and I honestly not sure what I'd be doing if I didn't have my brother as a guiding influence since the day I was born. I mean that.
No doubt. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you had to be on that. You know, bad egg path, I would imagine. I mean, guys, anybody that's jumping over the fences, that's usually the first indication. You were on the Wayne Catalano track.
No, I mean, from the first day, my brother used to, I mean, Joey, the first pony race I ever rode, 1983 at Far Hills. My brother, he ran the pony, brought him to the paddock, and then handed him off to somebody, and he ran down to the start, and that's about as much capability as I had. My dad had enough confidence to get me from, I could get the pony from the paddock to my brother's hands at the start, which, mind you, it's about a 3/8 mile race, so you don't have to gallop very far to the start. But I got down there, and there was my brother. He had hold of the pony. I was tied on for dear life, and you know, he let me go and ran up the hill. And then he ran up the hill and caught the pony. Actually, I fell off after the finish line. My skirt fell off the saddle. I fell off. The pony ran over me. And, you know, there was my brother taking my pony home and my dad taking me to the hospital. So, you know, it was an auspicious start at best. But, no, I mean, it went my – I was – you know, I went to college, just kind of somehow slid through that, and then I worked in a barn. I worked for Janet Elliott all of 1993, and my brother and I started Steeplechase Times in 1994, and that he had all the expertise in that. I had none. I had no writing experience. I had no business sense, and he really took that and ran with it and led me down that path. I mean, I continued to ride races till 2000, but all the way we were doing Steeplechase Times. He wrote me a letter in the winter of 96-97. I was going to retire. I'd had too many head injuries, and I was down and out. I mean, I was really not in a good place. And my big brother sat down and wrote me about a 4-page letter, and just not harsh, but just, you know, give me some push and give me some help. And he set up an internship at the Blood Horse in the winter of 97 for me, and I worked there for, he did it all. I mean, he said Dan Mearns and Ray Pollock and those guys, my brother took care of everything. I went down there and worked for the Blood Horse for a month, and that changed my life, because I walked out of there saying, okay, I can do something other than ride races. I mean, I don't have to just be a jockey. And I went back to riding, and then actually had the best years of my career. And but I think it was the pressure, taking a little pressure off of riding and getting a little confidence in myself to be able to do something else. And that was all from my brother. I mean, I wouldn't have done it, and I'm not sure what I really would have done without his confidence, his caring, his interest. And I'm not alone. That goes for a lot of people that he does that for and has done that for. So, as I said, I'm very proud of him, and I'm proud to be his little brother, that's for sure.
Well, really nice. And certainly the mentorship that he and you and Tom provide for, you know, yesterday we had, Monday we had the conversation with Johnny D about Kids to the Cup and how inspiring it is. And actually, there's been some wonderful conversation that spun off of that. And, you know, we've talked many times about what the Saratoga Special has done and become basically a test tube or a petri dish for aspiring turf riders or people that want to have some proximity to the game. And you guys have been invaluable on that front, because it's a perfect hotbed for an internship as well, and for the mentoring that you guys provide.
No doubt, we're very proud of that. That was not something we set out to do. It just kind of organically grew into that from the very beginning, from Quint Kesemick early on, all the other great names and people that have gone on to do great things in our sport, not just, they didn't end up just being, I mean, some are turf riders and some are doing other things. You know, you got Travis Stone and Gabby Gaudette and Jim Mulvihill and Pete Fornatale and all the way down. I mean, it's just, it's an amazing group. We have Katie Bo Williams is now on CNN, and, it's just Ryan Jones, a great kid that's, will make it big, and you know, and has a great appreciation for the sport. Doesn't necessarily work in it, but now we're very proud of that, and that a lot of that comes from my brother's kind of steady hand at the wheel. He just has a very natural way of dealing with chaos and a lot of different personalities, and I'm a much more. I don't know how I describe myself, but I'd be much more kind of mercurial and emotional and passionate and kind of like just wildly unhinged at times. And in work phases, I mean, not like I think my life is pretty steady now. But I, obviously, as you said, I rode jump races for a lot of years, and that's a pretty good indication of what your mental, you know, state can be or what you're looking for in life. So without Joe steering the ship, there would be no Saratoga Special. And we're very proud of that group. I always say we're the poor man's Darley Flying Star program, and kids that come work for us. And you know, the best part is the experience of where, you know, dancing on your feet and making sure, you know, you got to get out there and write a story, and you get kicked around by a trainer or a jockey or an owner, and not necessarily even on purpose, but they're busy and you can't get them. And then, you know, you got to call an audible, and you got to come back. And there's no, I mean, we've had kids come back and say, you know, they're writing a preview on the Saratoga Do, and they come in the office and say, I got nothing. And you look at him, you're like, no, that's not an answer. There's no, I got nothing. You got to come up with something, because we need 1,000 words by tonight, and you need to write it. And that's great experience for people to, in certainly in horse racing, but in life too, to be able to go out there and work like that. And you know, be able to, I think for our sport especially, I mean, the opportunity to meet the players like you do when you work for a daily newspaper at Saratoga. I mean, you know, how, you know, you, those kids, even myself, I mean, you know, the chances of me going up and getting in conversations with Todd Pletcher or Bill Mott or, you know, whomever, all the way back to when we started, you know, I'd go try to get in a conversation with Bobby Frankel. I mean, you talk about a lesson in trying to, you know, deal with people in a situation and, you know, stand your ground, but don't overstep your ground. And I think that's where a lot of those kids learn that to, you know, learn sure. how to handle that. And it's great. It's just a brilliant way of getting to meet people and learn about our sport. And again, we're very proud of that for sure.
Well, if one of the kids have a problem this year writing about the Saratoga Dew, they can I'll bring them over to Siaka. They could go to Hollywood Herb. They could go to Herbie McCauley. I'll give them Herb's number. They could go to Mr. Engel.
Exactly.
They could go to Charlie Engel.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yep. No, and that's how we. I mean, I think the beauty of the Saratoga Special. I think part of the reason why it's always been, I mean, it's been successful is we don't. There's not a blueprint necessarily of the Saratoga Special. So yeah, if you write a preview about the Saratoga Dew and include all that, that's okay. You know, we don't have. You know, it doesn't have to be. If it's 600, 800, 1,200 words, you know, you can, it's fluid. So that part, you got to be creative and you know, you just can't come back and say, I got nothing. I mean, that's the bottom line rule for us. You got to come up with something. And that's a good lesson in newspaper journalism, but also, again, in life, you have to get the job done. And that's a really important lesson. And the ones who made it big from the Saratoga Special were always able to do that. And Travis Stone, literally, he was sleeping in a room next to the office and doing a radio show in the closet. And he just you could tell that kid was going to make it. I mean, he wanted to be an announcer that day, and you knew he was going to make it by his work ethic, his dedication, his pride, his desire, all those great traits in humans that you want and the people who are successful have those traits.
Very much. Well, I'm glad that we went into that direction. That's a nice bookend. It's a bookend piece with Johnny's discussion, because I asked him to explain to people who weren't familiar with Kids to the Cup and what that produced in terms of industry participants. So there are templates out there because people are intimidated. You know, you talk about the intimidation factor of certain people. And certain situations. I mean, that's natural. But once you have some experience overcoming that that trepidation, it does carry you forward later on. And I mean, if you, as somebody who came out of sales and marketing, that's a big part of it. Being able to confront people on a cold call and not being put off or easily dissuaded and finding ways to get in front of a decision maker when it comes to that. These are the kinds of experiences, so even if people don't end up going forward in the industry, they get a life skill that will prove valuable down the road.
Yeah, no question. I mean, we've always said writing for it means writing for the Saratoga Special will teach you those life skills that, you know, the writing part, you certainly will improve an email, whether you stay in the game or whether you become a writer. It does hone those skills to be able to get in a conversation, to meet a deadline, to be able to put some thought and sense into your wording, whether you're just writing an email for your next job or writing a sales proposal or whatever you got to write. And those skills are they're absolutely, you know, important when it comes to what you're going to do in life. And you need those, whatever you're doing. And, you know, that's what we've, it's been fun. I mean, I think all of us, you know, the one lesson I've always taught to people that come along, they look at us and think it's easy. You think it's, oh, you're naturally more confident, or it comes easy for you to be able to go in and Bill Mott's barn and get in a conversation about a horse. And I'm kind of like, man, I'm nervous every time I walk into Todd Pletcher's barn or Bill Mott's barn, or walking, you know, back from the winner's circle to the jock's room with Ramon Dominguez or John Velasquez or Mike Smith or Jerry Bailey. I mean, interviewing Jerry Bailey when you're just starting the Saratoga Special, I mean, that was, talk about intimidating. And you could ask him a question, and he would summarize the race in about 7 words, brilliantly summarized. I mean, he just could tell you the entire, like, exactly what happened in 7 words, and you'd be standing there dumbfounded without another question, because he basically just, you know, you're kind of thinking about your next question, thinking he's going to at least give you 10 or 15 or 20 words. And, yeah, you better think on your feet right quick and be good at it. So, and, you know, all of us have been in situations that, you know, you're on the back foot and you're trying to figure out how to get back to the front foot. So, yeah, it's great life skills.
I love it. Well, Sean, let's get a couple of things in. I did want to get the Nashville report, and I missed you at Nashville.
Yeah, exactly. I just, you know, I got to thinking, if Nashville isn't good enough for Steve Bick, then you know what? Not good enough for Sean Clancy. I'm just not going to go. I mean, I made that decision. I was like, you know, Bick's a smart guy, well-traveled, knows every barbecue joint from Seattle to Tallahassee. I'm like, you know what? If he doesn't think Nashville, the Iroquois steeplechase, is worthy, then forget it. I'm going to go up to Willowdale. So, yeah, I jumped ship. I went to, I had 2 runners in Nashville. I had 3 at Willowdale. And my parents had got a tailgate space at Willowdale. My brother was going there. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go up the road 2.5 hours and go to Willowdale and spend the day with my family. And I'm glad I did. We won a race. My parents got in another winner's circle picture, which I was laughing. My first win picture was May 9th, 1970, with all my family. And here we are still getting in win pictures in, you know, May of 2022. So it's been... that's been 52 years of win pictures with my family. So that was special. We, my dad, he'll be 87 in the fall. My mom, who designed the silks that I've talked about before, she added the red cap before River D Stable, back when all the horses ran under Mrs. Joseph P. Clancy, her silks, and now River D. And, Joey was there, and Katie, his dog, was in the win picture. I drove away. We had a horse named 20. The horse was named 20 Years On, and Teddy Davies rode 20 Years On, and that is Blythe Miller and Joe Davies' son. And I called Blythe on the way home. I said, did you ever think your son would be riding a winner for me at Willowdale in 2022? And we grew up together, great friends, really competed against each other for years. She was tough to beat then, and still tough to beat now. And it was really cool to have that happen. And I just think how life goes. And Aunt Nance, Blythe's mom, who has been absolutely in my corner my whole life, she was there, and she was tearing up, and I was tearing up. And Joe Davies and I, we don't really get along about most issues. We're always clashing about one thing or another. And I put my arm around him. I said, look at this, Joe. Look, we finally agree on something. And we had a good laugh. So, yeah, you know, when a win always, you know, always brightens your day. And especially, you know, it's more than just winning a horse race. It's sharing things with friends and family. And it was a special day.
Well, it 20 years on, that was a secretariat-like performance.
Better than What about that? Better than Secretariat. I love that. 31 and a quarter. I love that quarter. Oh, that made me. Oh, I love that quarter. So, yeah, he's a quarter length better than Secretariat. How about that?
That was cool. He won very nicely, and it was fun. Teddy Davies, 18 years old, he had a triple on the day, but before the day, he had ridden four sanctioned winners, one being the Maryland Hunt Cup this year. But he got a chance to ride for Jack Fisher and River D, and he kept saying after, he said, that's some horse. And I thought, wow, it's so cool to see, 18-year-old kid's eyes were big as saucers, and he's just impressed by, a little 110 handicap rated horse, and it was fun to see that enthusiasm and that respect, that that kind of moment to cherish a cool horse in a race like that. It was fun. It was just, I just love seeing that kid's just his innocence and his excitement for winning a race. That was really special.
20 years on, won the handicap, and had a couple of nice efforts. Mission Brief, third in the Maiden Claimer, and Senior Seville. Queen's Empire, third, though, at Nashville in that handicap race under Jamie Bargery.
Yeah, a little disappointing. I thought this horse would be a really good horse. He broke his maiden in November. I thought he'd really come around this year. He's been a little disappointing. Ran okay at Middleburg, and ran fair down there, 2 3/4 miles. I thought he'd like it, but he ran fine. Finished third. It's hard to complain about hitting the board in a race like that. A little disappointed with him. And then we had a nice maiden awakened. He ran very well in the maiden race. Finished fourth, running on the end. Just got beaten a photo for third. And hopefully, I'm still thinking big things for him. Hopefully he'll qualify. He's a break his maiden. Hopefully come to Saratoga this summer. Phipps Stable, homebred. Not homebred anymore because he runs for River D. But cool horse by Curlin out of deep Phipps family. So that was a good effort. We were happy with that.
Should mention and at least include in a little more detail the Iroquois result. I mentioned Monday in the overall recap of stakes for the weekend, but the first grade one of the year, of course, and snap decision with authority for Jack. And what did you hear and think of what came back out of snap decision's effort?
No, it was a great effort. I mean, it was good to see him back at his best. He's for him, he was on a, what are you in, 10 in a row or something like that, and then he lost, he'd lost 3 in a row. So, you're beginning to question him a little bit. I think people were questioning him a little bit. But that was as good as he's ever been. Beat Pistol Whip, who's a decent horse from England, came over for Nicky Henderson. And
right.
Yeah, it was cool. Snap sat close, stalked the pace the whole way, was, wide, free a little bit, but he just powered away from Pistol Whip, won by 7.25, I think it was, and was, ultra impressive. Of course, Mean Queen wasn't there. She hit a little bit of a bump in the road. I don't know exactly her status now, but yeah, you kind of missed that rematch, but you can only beat who's there, and it was fun to see Snap Decision back to his best. Cool horse, big, robust, son of Hard Spun, who's done, he's done nothing wrong in his whole career over hurdles. He's just been a star. He wanted to, to go back to back in the Iroquois. It takes a good horse to do that. It was fun. It's fun to see him, again, back at his best.
The wins got spread around pretty good at Percy Warner, and Cyril Murphy and Mr. Naylor, who very typically, Sean, they wade into the season, and feels like Cyril Murphy has got the barn kind of more ready to fire right out of the beginning of the season this year.
Yeah, that horse was a pretty nice horse, Scorpion's Revenge. He broke his maiden Montpelier last fall, came back in allowance race in second. And, when Cyril's pretty shrewd, when he skipped that allowance race and named for the novice race, probably a telling move, or not probably, it certainly was a telling move. The horse ran big. It was fun to see some wins spread around. You know, our sport can be a little top heavy, like the flat racing game. So it's fun to see some, you know, different people win races, which is important for, you know, competition and enthusiasm and participation for sure. So yeah, that was cool. It was a nice day that way. Where, you know, down Royal for the Daltons. That was Bernie and Kate Dalton. To win the Henley, which Philly Mare Stake, which was brilliant. Tough old mare, New York bred by Alphabet Soup, still going strong. Bernie's 100th win of his career, American Steeplechase jockey. Doesn't sound like a big number, but he is the 41st jockey to win 100 races in American Steeplechasing. And those are long. Those are tough. Those are tough wins. You know, for every win, there's a lot of losses and a lot of falls. And so that was special. Bernie and Kate, they work hard. Everybody likes them. Everybody roots for them, especially when their homebred mare wins the stake at Nashville. That was a poetic moment and a special moment.
Well, and Leslie Young having a fabulous season. She's piled up 18 wins already.
Yeah, she's had an unbelievable spring. She's really taken advantage of some spots, very shrewd kind of entries, picking off some timber races at some of these meets, short fields. But, you know, she's got a great team of horses. She won three at Willowdale, and she's had a great spring. She's putting pressure on. I think she opened up. I think she might be three or four in front of Carrie now. Four in front of Carrie. Yeah. Carrie Brown second. Jack Fisher's way back in third, really. Leslie won two at Nashville and maybe, I can't even remember, two at Willowdale, I guess, or maybe even three at Willowdale. But, yeah, she had a great spring. And, again, just picking out some, finding some great spots for horses. It's very shrewd.
Well, the last of the spring season winds up at Radnor coming on Saturday. And I hadn't looked actually at ahead to see if you were involved at Radnor on Saturday.
Yeah, well, I entered one. I'm on the AEs in the maiden hurdle with Penicillin Success. I'm hoping he draws in. Scratch time's today, so I'm kind of waiting to see if I get in there. I hope I do. Kind of a big field, but there's some horses cross center, and so I'm hoping I get lucky and get in there. But yeah, that's the end of the spring season, which it's a funny old game. It's like you have this long, hard winter, and you're all psyched up for the spring, and then you know, it seems like it won't get here, and then it gets here, and it goes by so fast you can't believe you're at the at the end of it already. Disappointing. We don't go to Fair Hill. Fair Hill is always the traditional finish Memorial Day, so we don't have that. So it's a little bit even shorter than usual. Yeah, it's been a good year. I think it's been a decent spring. You know, a couple people really had some great seasons, and then we get a big break. I don't think we go. I don't think it's another jump race until Colonial Downs, which is mid-July. Yep. So, yeah, you get about a two-month break, which is probably good for some of the horses and disappointing for some of the others who didn't get a chance. I mean, if you're on the A's at Radnor and don't get to run again until mid-July, so that's tricky. But, you know, that's the way the sport is, so not much we can do about that. We just strive forward. Hopefully have a good summer, and hopefully have a run or two at Saratoga, and have some fun out.
Sean Clancy with us. There's the National Steeplechase glance from the big weekend at Willowdale and at Percy Warner. And Sean, before we wrap up, any Preakness thoughts or favorite Preakness moments over the years?
I mean, I was thinking about it today. I heard the last one I covered with Mike Penna for HRM was American Pharoah in the rain, and I remember standing out there just getting absolutely drenched, and seeing him win, you're pretty confident that, yeah, it was finally going to be a Triple Crown. Cool horse, cool moment. I remember that one really well. I remember Curling and Street Sense. I was watching with Carl Nasker. I'd written the story in my head. I had it all down. It was like perfect. And then Curling nailed Street Sense, which changed everything. Yeah, there's so many great moments there.
you know, over the years, Ray Alexander was brilliant. There are, you know, some great moments. You know, there's been some funny side. I remember watching it with Mike Salito. That was a cool moment. Yeah, there's been some great moments in Preakness history. One of the, you know, all-time great spots in, on our sports travels.
What was your first Preakness?
God, that's a great question. I'm, you know, I really didn't go because I was always I was always riding at Radnor.
Good point.
So I would ride at Radnor. The first one I really got close to was that same year that I was talking about my brother getting me that internship. I covered the Silver Charm, Touch Gold, Captain Bodge's Freehouse, Triple Crown for the Blood Horse. But I actually was there all week, so I went out and watched. I did a morning. It was almost like a blog, one of the first real blogs. I was writing every day for the Blood Horse website, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then I took off and rode, went to Radnor, and actually won three races at Radnor. I thought to myself, man, this is easy. I didn't get on a horse all week. I rode Saturday and wherever we were on the Saturday, and then I covered the Triple Crown for the Blood Horse, and then jumped in the car and rode three winners at Radnor. So I thought, wow, maybe this is the way to do it. So that was the first one I remember really being close to. But I remember I watched that race on a little black and white TV on the hood of an Imperator horse fan back at the barn at Radnor, cheering for Freehouse, who I just loved. I loved Paco Gonzalez, who was one of the first trainers that I'd ever really spent any time with. I was really young and new at it, and he couldn't have been nicer, and I was rooting for Freehouse because I just love that horse, big gray with that white eye, and man, I love that horse. So that's how I remember. That was the first one. I mean, I watched a bunch, you know, but over the years, but it was usually like that, you know, at some party after the races at Radnor or on a, you know, little black and white TV somewhere. So and then I guess, I mean, I'm trying to think of the first one. And I stopped riding in 2000, so it would have been 2001 maybe was my first, or 2002, or one of some of those years, covering for Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred, really. I covered Smarty Jones and Barbara, of course, and you know, Funny Side and those races. And, yeah, it was fun. It's great memories.
Yesterday was the anniversary, the real anniversary of Silver Charm's win, 97, of course, and we talked about it quite a bit. And Freehouse is a horse that, it's one thing for Touch Gold, who doesn't get the credit he deserves, but Freehouse, he is another one who won nine times, made $3 million, and is rarely brought up. I mean, even when cowbreds get, people talk about good cowbreds, for some reason he gets overlooked.
Yeah, he was such a cool horse. I just loved that horse. He was so charismatic. Just big, beautiful horse. And it was fun. But, you know, it was lots of little trainers. It just seemed like it wasn't so top heavy as it was now. And covering it was brilliant. I mean, I remember watching his Breeze at Pimlico with Paco Gonzalez. I mean, Paco and I were the only two. I was the only guy with him watching Freehouse Breeze. And he went so fast, and everybody thought he blew the race. And I watched it with Paco. He was hitting his stopwatch, and he looked at his stopwatch, and he says, "Shee," and then he hit it again. He goes, "Shee," and he hit it again. He goes, "Shee." we it was classic. I mean, I was laughing so hard, and I mean, I wasn't laughing because the guy, he was just distraught over how fast he was going, and his brother was on the horse, and we walked back to the barn, and we looked at him, and the horse was standing there. He wasn't even blowing. His ears were up. He was looking across that playground in the background behind the stakes barn, and Paco looked at me. He said, "You look okay." I said, "Yeah, he looks okay." And we both kind of took a sigh of relief, like it was going to be fine. And I'd never forget that. It was just, that was such a cool horse and an amazing group of horses all the way through that year. And yeah, it was fun. That was really my first, yeah, that was the first one I ever got really close to. Like I said, I didn't watch the race live, but that was the first one. I'll never forget that one.
Sean Clancy, everybody, and this is horseracing.com. Saratoga Special, of course. The Saratoga Special season is looming, and we will maybe see you tomorrow. You're going to be
I'm going to try to get to the Alibi Breakfast tomorrow and kick around there, and then I don't know, my weekend plans, I'm either going to Radnor or going to, I think it's the Babe Ruth, Upper Loudoun County Babe Ruth, the Devil Rays, I guess they don't call them the Devil Rays anymore, the Rays against the Diamondbacks maybe, or no, the Mets, yeah, the Mets Rays, Fireman's Field, 12:30 Saturday afternoon, perhaps Miles Clancy on the mound, so we'll see.
Oh, we're waiting. Is he a game time decision, or is he?
Yeah, I stand. I'm just a bystander, you know. So I don't know.
Let's be honest. Well, you as a field coach would be problematic.
Wait a minute. I've helped out. I've been the assistant coach over the years. Whenever they desperately need somebody, and they're out of actually baseball coaches, they get me. And I will say we had one year that the coach, the head coach, got kicked out of the final game for arguing calls with the umpire. Umpire kicked him off the field, and then he came marching back on the field. The umpire threatened to call the cops, and so I was in the dugout trying to keep the kids' attention on the game. And one of the classic moments was after the game. We actually were supposed to have one more game after that, and the other assistant coach was a guy named Hieronymus. He was a principal, so it was Principal Hieronymus, and he was kind of the second in charge of the team. I was definitely the third in charge, meaning I was not in charge at all. And one of the fathers turned to Hieronymus, and he pointed to me, and he said, what about Miles' dad? How could, do you think he could coach the last game? And he looked, turned, he looked at me, he said, nah, he's just a rah-rah guy. And I looked at him, and I laughed so hard, I was like, exactly right, I'm just a rah-rah guy. So yeah, that's my role as a baseball coach. I just try to rah-rah the kids to victory.
Well, you're in trouble now because I will make sure that Rah-Rah Clancy sticks. There is a famous moniker like this for a prominent editor known as Pom Pom. You are now Rah-Rah.
That's fine. I've been called way worse. I'm happy to be called the enthusiastic, upbeat, confidence building guy in the dugout for a bunch of kids trying to have fun. So, yeah, that's fine. I'll take that to my grave. I can be the rah-rah guy. That's cool. I'll be a rah-rah guy for anybody from Miles' baseball team to Saratoga Special interns to anybody playing this crazy game we play. So that's cool. I'm okay with that.
There he is, everybody. Buy Sean Clancy on your Twitter feed. Make sure that he is on your Twitter feed, and we will. I don't know if I'll see you tomorrow because the only year I've ever actually gone to the Alibi is when they gave me the old Hilltop. So,
man, that's just typical you. If you don't get an award, you don't go to the thing, huh? That's how you roll. If you don't get a medal, you don't play, huh? Man. Wow,
that's my policy.
We gotta get. That's fine. You know what? Guess what? Actually, you're getting an award at the Iroquois Steeplechase next year.
Oh, now you're thinking.
Yeah. Now you're thinking.
Yeah. All right.
Yep. Old Hickory Boulevard. We're gonna give you the Old Hickory Award next year. So maybe you'll get there. All right. Deal. Steve Vick, winner of the Old Hickory Hilltop Award. We'll add another word to it.
I'm making my the arrangements now.
Yeah, exactly. He's on Southwest right now. Get the man an award. We'll get him to the race.
So great. Sean Clancy, everybody. Just so good. Thank you, Sean. We will look for you tomorrow.
Thanks. I enjoyed it as ever.
Always great. There it is. We got about 10 minutes, and I'm afraid that Seth Merrow is It's actually, you know what? It's almost better that Sean will be in, that Seth will be in tomorrow because there is action today. I don't know if he handicapped Canterbury or Indy, but Seth tomorrow, okay? So for those of you that have been anxiously awaiting Seth, but Chris Katulak, we're going to try to celebrate Steve Anderson, and as sad as the situation is, I do want Chris Katulak to join us to pay tribute to the longtime voice of Fonner, and really, for a certain generation of fans in Nebraska, the only, you know, the only voice they know for Fonner. And if you missed the early part of the show, I mentioned that I got to talk to Steve a couple of times because we wanted to have him on, but also inadvertently several times because for a long period of years, his number was conflated in my phone with Steve Anderson of the Racing Form. So I would send a text or I'd make a call and he would either text back and say, "Steve in Nebraska," and I would laugh, and we would get a kick out of it. But then I would check with him about how things were going at Fonner. Chris Katulak joins us. Chris, this is so tough for everybody there, I'm sure, and for stakeholders and fans and horse players that enjoyed Steve for two decades, extended our deepest sympathies.
Well, I appreciate that, Steve, and thanks for squeezing me into your show here. By the way, I have done the same thing with the late Steve Anderson, our beloved track announcer, and Steve Anderson out there in California, the turf rider for decades, and we have a dentist in town named Steve Anderson as well, and I've got little certain codes for all of them in my cell phone so that I'm not confusing one with the other, and Steve would get a chuckle out of that if and when it would happen. Steve Anderson, if you couldn't kind of just pick it up yourself over his race calls, who, by the way, he did call for 19 years here at Fonner Park.
Wow.
Dean Williams called for 32 years until I squeezed in and got in 10 myself here at Fonner before I went my merry way and returned. But Steve was such a humble guy, and we know there are many announcers or media types who could kind of knock down a wall with their egos and arrogance when they step into a room, and that was not Steve. He was self-effacing, he was self-deprecating, almost to a fault. He was just a modest guy, and he brought that to the races every day. He showed up every day. I'm convinced he was giddy that he could do, that he was really the track announcer at Fonner Park, and that showed in his work.
One of the things that's always amazing in this industry, in the game, you never know, who knows who and who has had an existing relationship. Andy Serling sent me a note this morning, and it prompted a call. Andy sent me a note. He said, "Steve Anderson from Fonner died." He said, "He's the loveliest guy." He said, "Andy said he's known him for a number of years from when Andy started going to the horseman's thing in Nebraska." They would bring in Steve Crist or they would bring in Andy, and they would handicap, and that's when he got to know him. And Andy said he just talked to him 2 weeks ago. And so it just shows, I mean, how people in this industry just touch each other one way or another.
Yeah, sure, 100%. And, Steve, part of his self-deprecating look at himself, if I'm not being redundant with that line there, or over-redundant, but anyway, Steve would say, he said, I mean, I've lost track how many times he says, "I've never used an original call in my life," in his race calls. He said, I just grab and take from others. And some could say, well, he's being a copycat. But then others, you could say, well, no, he's carrying on the tradition. For example, the picking them up and laying them down. And here they come into the stretch. Those are all from the late Terry Wallace. And he's known for his ding-dong battles on the front end. Well, you and I probably associate that with Dave Johnson, at least I do. And speaking of Andy Serling and
New York commentators on horse racing. Steve would always close out his shows here or elsewhere by saying, "May the horse be with you," when he was at the racetrack or doing a radio show. And, of course, that's a Harvey Pack-ism. And, but Steve just, he liked what it sounded like. He liked to say it. And, you know, frankly, I think people liked the way they felt when they heard Steve say that. In reflection of Steve and his body of work here, he was hokey. He said some non-traditional things in his race calls, but they typically put a smile on my face, and I think others felt the same way with him, because he was as honest and personal and sincere in real life as he was professionally. What you heard through the mic was Steve on the whole, I guess.
How did he come to Fawner? Because he was a sports writer or a sports publicist?
He actually did some news reporting for one of the local television stations back in the 70s. So he had that sort of acumen. And after I left, after my 10 years, it was sort of a hodgepodge of announcers, a mishmash, one for 1 year, another for a few years, this and that. And Steve just made the remark to Hugh Miner, the general manager at the time, who was the same general manager who took a shot and hired me. Neither Steve nor I had called a race anywhere at a racetrack, certainly professionally, but I had never called a horse race before I stepped up on the mic and called it at Fawner. So Hugh Miner had a reputation of rolling the dice with his announcers, but they knew Steve, they knew he loved horse racing, and they knew he had some media background, and they had other plans for him for media marketing, and Steve just stepped right up and did it from 2004 for 19 years, and there was nothing Steve wouldn't want to do or attempt to do to promote Nebraska horse racing and certainly Fawner Park, and boy, is he missed. Now, I have to say that Gary Shafe, who's the longtime announcer at Columbus, is our interim announcer, and he stepped right up when the duty called and has been doing a terrific job, but as far as I'm concerned, he was on out here in 2022, and we've got some things to recognize him here at the track on Saturday, and looking forward to that. I'll tell you when, because it's real, the man did pass away, and despite the marvels of modern medicine, and I kept thinking he'd pull out and maybe not call races again, but just at least survive, which of course he didn't, but it really tears me up, because his wife would sit in the clubhouse, sometimes with friends, other times by herself, and you could just see that she was, throughout the course of any day at the races, she was just so proud that that was her man calling the horse races up there. And boy, that's a tough one there, for sure.
I saw some of the stories. Chris Katulak joining us to pay tribute to Steve Anderson, the two-decade-long voice of Fawner Park, who won friends, countless friends around the game. And I saw the mention about the roller rink that he inherited from his father, that suffered a snowfall fate, the roof collapse, I guess, but last year even.
Starts out of him for sure. He survived the bad speed. That's how he's. I call him Skates. That was my nickname for him all the time. Was Gates Anderson, Todd Otto, my best friend who was here at Fawner Park till he died suddenly, and the reason I'm here in this office right now. But anyway, he and Todd and I called Steve Skates. That was our nickname for him, He would allow people to make fun of him. He would make fun of himself, just all water off a duck's back. He, when you had a conversation with him, he'd typically go in reverse rather than forward. I mean, he could talk an iron dog off the porch, this guy, but it was, if you just sat back and took a deep breath and listened to it, you couldn't help to enjoy yourself around him.
Well, here's as we wrap up, got about a minute, let's listen to a portion of a Gus Fawner steak, a Bosselman, and here's Steve Anderson.
And the Nuts goes on with it now by three parts of a length. It's the Nuts who's up and up two over the field. Yield the Storm, still a solid second. They're scrambling from off the pace for third. And here they come into this stretch. The Nuts going on with it, throwing a big race at 25-1. It's the Nuts first, Yield to the Storm at second. In the hot pursuit, here comes Wayzata Bay and Habaneros, but they're not going to get to the Nuts. He's done it in shocking fashion here in the Bosselman at Fodder Park.
I had to slip it in.
Yeah, for sure. Well, he loved the Mad Horse with Scratch one time. He loved announcing that Scratch as well of that particular name. I can guarantee you that. His other favorite call was, favorite horse was Diamond Joe when the Nebraska bred won the Bosselman in 2013. So you can access all of that stuff on our Fauna Park website if you want to relive Steve Anderson, and there's a good reason to do it. By the way, Steve would be upset with me if I didn't squeeze in. It's our closing day. On Preakness Day, and we do have a mandatory carryout or payout. It's nothing like the big one we were promoting a few weeks ago on Bosselman Day. But anyway, it's a pick five, and it will be paid out coming up on Saturday afternoon.
Chris, I appreciate this, and hearts to Kathy and family and friends. Steve Anderson at 69, and a good season at Fauner Park. I appreciate the visit and the opportunity to pay tribute to Steve.
As always, thank you for your attention to Fauner, and on this day specifically, Steve Anderson. Thanks, Steve.
Chris Katulak, everybody, and Steve Anderson. Want to thank Chris and John Dooley earlier, Sean Clancy with a great visit, Chris Hyde with the details as we work to stop slaughter. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale and the one and only Leon Blue Switz that got the morning off to a rollicking start. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Canterbury opening day. Good luck to everybody there. Talk to you tomorrow from Pimlico. Hi-ho.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.